Thank you for listening to the 31st episode of the Career Planning Show, which aims to help you launch and grow a fulfilling career. On this episode, we feature an interview with Nicole Czierski. Based in Hamburg, Germany, Nicole helps science, technology, engineering, and mathematics experts and research and development teams navigate corporate work life so they have more time, headspace, and passion to do what they do best. If you'd like to learn more about Nicole's services, visit NicoleCzierski.com and womeninstem-reimagined.com. Enjoy listening to the interview.
Welcome to the Career Planning Show. Our guest today is Nicole Czierski. Nicole, how are you?
I'm fine, Alex. Thank you for having me.
All right. Nicole, can you walk us through your career journey so far?
Yes. So I studied food chemistry and I really loved the application aspect of it. You know, instead of being just on the hardcore front end of science, having this, you know, having something to do with things that you can touch in your daily life, meaning food. And in Germany, the food regulation also encompasses cosmetics and packaging and these kind of things. So that then led me to finish my studies with my diploma thesis in the cosmetics industry, researching deodorants and why they sometimes work and sometimes don't. And that topic was so interesting, both for me from a research perspective, but also from the company perspective, because obviously they wanted to sell things that work. And so I stayed there for my PhD. Or to complete my PhD. And after that, I started working in consumer goods innovation for a while. I really loved that, developing new products, testing them with consumers, putting them on the market, you know, scaling up production, all of these kind of things. It was fantastic. And and then there was in the company where I worked, there was a merger or acquisition, anyways, something that led to the restructuring. And typically when that happens, because through that acquisition, there was all of a sudden you had double the team, you know, one in Europe and one in America. And so they put all of the projects on hold until they figured out, okay, how are we going to set ourselves up? Who's going to stay? Who's going to go? All of this. And so basically I was the one to go. So my role was made redundant, but I found another job inside the company doing product research. But still, my workload was very much determined by internal stakeholders giving us projects. And there were hardly any that came through. And so long story short, over the course of, let's say, a total of 1.5 years, I was working at 10% capacity. Wow. And I really like being busy. So that was really, really horrible for me. And I, you know, at the time when I noticed, okay, this is really seeping into my personal life as well. You know, I was, I did nothing at work but twiddling my thumbs all day. And then I came home and I was totally exhausted and couldn't be bothered to do anything. And I was okay, this can't go on like this. So I looked for the help for a coach. And within 4 sessions, obviously not everything was peachy again, but he had me trying new things, knocking on new doors, simply pursuing new strategies and also mixing up my life a little bit so I would get my energy back. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, how did he do that? Mm-hmm. I want to be able to do that too for people. And that's when I started coaching training. And at the same time, because I pursued all of those new opportunities or knocked on new doors, a position opened up within the company in a completely different area, where I could basically write the job description myself. And that is how I switched from doing science to doing change management. So really both in building my coaching practice next to my corporate job, and in my corporate job really focusing more on the people side of things. And that's where I'm right now.
That's exciting. And along that journey, what would you say was one exercise or one tool, one resource that you came across that had the real impact in your life, career or personal? Is there something that stands out to you as you look back?
I think it is the having someone in your life who is not your family, not your friends, not your boss, but someone who has no vested interest other than helping you find your best solution, like that coach. It could have been a mentor as well. But having that person to validate my experience, because I thought I'm crazy, you know, how many people would love to get paid to do nothing and so on. And so to really validate my experience and giving me just a bit of inspiration for different things and tools to try, and just encouraging and cheering me on the way, and also challenging my own thoughts and just really helping me process all of what was going on. So I guess really having someone, and then not only to talk things through, but also for that social accountability, you know, it's like, okay, have you tried this? Okay, you said you were going to do that. Did you do it? And so on, you know, not in the sense of like scolding me when I didn't, but really then helping me to reflect, okay, so what was in the way? Okay, what would you rather try? And so on. So just so that I would get a nudge and a nudge and a nudge to slowly, slowly get out of that black hole.
That's good. And you ended up pursuing this train of thought where you figured that the best area to focus on in terms of who you want to help are women in STEM, and looking at turning their career frustrations into a renewed love for their work, as you put it. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got to pick someone that you want to help. So, and obviously, I mean, I'm not discriminating against anyone. I'm willing to work and help everyone who wants to come and learn and grow and develop. So that is one thing. But I chose women in STEM particularly because I was one of them, or I am one of them. So like I have been through the same struggles. I have found really great ways to deal with them, overcome them, or even now, you know, mitigate them and be really proactive about it, both from my own journey, but also from the coaching training and all of that. Our brains are wired in the same way. So I can imagine that people who are more on the very creative, artistic side of things, our brains are not wired in the same. I'm no good to that level. You know, I can't make any music. I can draw a stick figure, but it's like, I know nothing about the creative process in that realm. But I do understand how a scientific mind works in terms of forming hypotheses and conducting tests and analyzing data and being super structured and so on. So it's just, I don't know, it's like we just drive better.
That's good. And if someone was right now sitting in their office listening to a podcast in their headphones and they realize that they're actually in the spot where you were a number of years ago, where they're feeling under-challenged in their work, they have the skills, they have the experience to do more, what would be a train of thought that you would have with respect to that particular situation?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think the company is still okay, you're just getting a little bored, or, you know, even frustrated because your ideas aren't heard, that is just, you will have those challenges just anywhere where you go, because it's just part of life, kind of. So what I don't recommend is, and that's my personal opinion, but what I don't recommend is immediately look for the next place to go to and hoping that in the next company, you're not going to have that same problem. And then it's almost like, you know, like in relationships where you have the honeymoon phase and everything is good. And then all of a sudden, you know, over time you realize, okay, this is just a normal company as well. There's company politics and there are personal agendas and there's a strategy that we need to implement and execute. And there's just things to get done. So learning how to, first of all, find yourself within the role that you are in, new challenges, meaning developing new skills, the ones that you don't have the bandwidth for, as long as you're still struggling to get a catch on all of the technical aspects of your job. So I always think that, let's say about 1.5 to 2 years in, you probably got all of the technical aspects down. You have your little network to get everything done. You know how the processes work, A to C. You know how you use the systems. You can make a really good impact. You deliver solid work.
Yes.
And that is the moment where you have the feeling and maybe I'm not learning anything anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe that is so because it's like driving a car, you know, you can do it without even paying attention to where the gas is or where the brake is. But that is the moment where you now have the bandwidth to start developing all of those other skills that you need that can enhance your career, that can build your leadership skills, you know, before you take on a leadership position, maybe all of these kind of this, it can be a huge playground. You just need to know how to look for it.
Mm-hmm. And if someone is in that position and they're self-sabotaging, they're using phrases like, I feel like an imposter, or I don't have the confidence to take my career to the next level. What are some of your thoughts with regards to that particular situation?
So first of all, everybody occasionally feels like that, no matter where you are at in your career. And I have spoken to also many senior managers, and it's just, there are just moments that where you don't know, that is kind of part of the job, you know, when you're at the front end of something, that is how you know you're doing something new, is when you don't know how to do it. And my recommendation is when somebody feels or has the feels like they want to say, I have imposter syndrome, it's just really okay, learn to live with it, you know. Don't try to fight it, don't try to obsess about it, but just learn, okay, it's there, it's part of normal life. And then instead redirect your focus on your strengths. If you don't know them yet, go on and discover them. Learn to embrace your unique quirks. You know, really the things that you might think are weaknesses or flaws, but that really make you unique and that contribute to that whole diversity of thought that we so need in teams.
Yes.
And focus on adding value to the world, because as long as you are shining the spotlight on you, you will always have incredibly high standards to yourself. You will always obsess about, okay, how do I look in front of myself and in front of others? But as soon as you focus the attention on the work that needs to get done, or the colleagues that you want to have, or the customers you want to make an impact for, then, I don't know, it's just other things become more important than obsessing about how good or not good you are.
I love that. And I very much agree with you. There are so many individuals who provide career advice, and the career advice that they provide is so focused on the individual feeling better about themselves, when at the end of the day, each one of us has certain experiences in our lives that maybe involved a certain level of trauma, or maybe have, you know, one aspect of us that is labeled by society in a negative way, or, you know, has a gap in terms of our skills and experience, and that is stated as an absolute requirement to be considered for the next opportunity. Well, the reality is that nobody will have 100% of the requirements for the next opportunity. The fact is that most likely you will have to be in that job and perform it in order to have the full scope of skills and experience that are required for you to do well in it. And so your train of thought around, you know, taking this thing that maybe is the imposter syndrome, or is, you know, a certain lack of confidence, or maybe something that is, you know, I like how you put it, the quirk, not necessarily something that's objectively negative about you. It's just something that's different, right? And put that on the shelf and actually focus on adding value to society, focus on, you know, finding a way to solve a problem that we're finding in our community. And that will help us find more better experiences out of the work that we're doing, as opposed to just focusing on, you know, self-enhancement.
Yeah, absolutely. And a mentor of mine, she always says, nothing is bad news. I mean, obviously, if we messed up, if we made a mistake, then we should acknowledge it, we should own it, and then seek to correct it and learn from it and do it better next time. But when it comes to things about ourselves, or let's say somebody's, you know, wants to apply to another open position, either internally and externally, and then you think, okay, so I have, you know, they request this, this, and this, but I only have 2 out of 3, but I have something else instead, you know? So then instead of taking this as, oh, this is bad news and now I can't do anything about it, you can always, okay, choosing to believe that there's no bad news, how can I reframe or spin everything else that I do have? Or how is even that gap or that lack of experience, how might that be a good thing? Because maybe you don't have the blinkers on that you get if you have done a job in a, you know, for decades. You might be coming with new and fresh ideas because you don't know, like, all of the, you're not indoctrinated, you know, with the best practices and the assumptions that we tend to hold when we are experts in something for too long and so on. So yeah, you can, in those moments when you feel like this, this idea that you're lacking something, that this is holding you back from going after something that you would really, really want to do, then just think, okay, if nothing is bad news, now how would I start talking about this?
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of bad news, the reality is that we live in an environment where the COVID-19 pandemic is a reality for businesses and for government. And it's not just one person, but there are quite a lot of people that I'm noticing are talking about not just pursuing very different roles, but even moving countries because they don't like the way the political leadership in the countries has handled the COVID-19 pandemic. Or, you know, there are all these external factors that are triggering trains of thought that would significantly impact a person's life, uproot them from their family and from their current networks and place them in a new environment. What comes to mind from your perspective?
But when it comes to taking decisions in this current climate, I mean, if your life is at stake, then by all means, go somewhere where you are safe, yes? Mm-hmm. But other than that, so I, for myself, I have the premise that I'm not making any big decisions when I'm not feeling good, when I'm not up to my energy, when I'm not at least a little content and happy with where I am. Mm-hmm. Because there's one thing, I always want to make sure that I like my reasons. And let's say I'm pouting with my government and now I'm uprooting my family and I'm moving somewhere else. And then I'm looking back a year or two later, will that have been a good enough reason to do that? You know, to take on all of what, I mean, you will have problems either way, you know, it's just a question, you know, which problem do you want to have? So doing that out of this, I totally get the frustrations. And I know many, many people have lost substantially their income, their livelihood is threatened. All of this, I can totally understand. And please don't think I'm like diminishing that or like not taking that seriously. However, at the same time, and yes, we can debate, was it right or not right, or did the politicians have an agenda or not, and so on, and did some people, you know, cheat the system and get rich through all of that misery and so on. Yes, there are really bad things that have happened. At the same time, it was a really unprecedented thing that just happened. And honestly, I don't want to be a politician right now and lead a country through that type of crisis. And so, you can only do it wrong. And so I wonder, again, everybody, please make up your own mind, have your own decision. But if we want to have a philosophical conversation here, then for me, this wouldn't be, you know, just because I disagree with that course, it's hard for me to imagine where I would draw the line in terms of what my country's leadership would have to be like for me in order to say, like, okay, I can't. It's like, I can't bear this anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I would probably, but I don't know. I've never lived in a country where I had to face in my own life dictatorship or you know, something like that. So I don't know. But just because I disagree with what the vaccination plan looks like, I'm not sure if that would be a good enough reason for me personally to just like make major life-changing decisions, unless I have a really good reason to do so. And, you know, something that pulls me toward, like, I don't know, there's like this awesome opportunity in the Caribbean or in Norway or wherever somebody might want to go. And that's why I want to go there, but not to, not out of spite.
Sounds good.
What do you think about this? I'm curious.
What I think about it is that we indeed need to consider the situation holistically. We actually recently went through the process of living in a totally different part of Canada. We moved from Toronto to Halifax while I was doing master's studies, and we had the experience of living on the east coast of Canada instead of central Canada for 2 years. And we really missed family. We really missed having my parents and my brother, his wife, and their children around. And it was such a meaningful aspect of our lives. And we didn't want to have our children grow up apart from family. Already the rest of our families are back in Romania, back in Ghana for my wife. And so us being on our own in a new environment, as great as it was, it really made us pause and think, well, what do we want for our future really? Is, you know, lower house prices, is stable income, an easier lifestyle really worth it? And in some situations it is, but you have to look at the full package and take that into account, because there are a lot of different considerations that are at play with any decision. And my train of thought is that we need to think wisely and holistically. And even if we make a decision, we go somewhere for a while, we can come back, but, you know, we should be open to changes like that in our lives in order to, and they will impact our careers most certainly. But as long as we look at things holistically and they make sense for us, and they're able to allow us to make the impact in society that we want to have, then I think it all comes together in a positive way. Now, I wanted to ask you, Nicole, what's next for you? What are you working on right now? And what are some of the goals that you have for the next little while?
I would be wrong to say I have no goals, but I have, over the past years, I have continuously made decision after decision after decision to eliminate more and more of the things in my life that I don't want in my life. And that might be people, that might be tasks to do, that might be whatever it is. And also to have more and more of the things in my life that I really want and that make me happy and content. So I can honestly say that I'm living my best life right now. That doesn't mean I don't look for things that I can learn, that I can grow, both in my corporate career, but also in, you know, serving my clients. There will always be little projects going on, like launching programs or hosting my free masterclass. And so there's always things to prepare and to continue to grow. But I'm really at a point where I sowed those little seeds and they've become plantlets. And now I'm just, yeah, like you said, I'm watering and nurturing, and I'm just wanna see what grows out of this with continuous effort and attention.
Yeah. And one question that I was meaning to ask you, and it didn't come to mind earlier, but I want to ask you, is we're talking about nurturing. If you think about children, who might show an interest in the kind of play that makes you think that, hey, STEM is something that maybe they should consider. It's something that maybe we can encourage them to pursue. Are there any games or tools or methodologies that you think are helpful that parents can use or educators can use to encourage children to explore the possibility of pursuing careers in STEM?
Mm. So what age of children are we talking about?
5 to 12, let's say.
Yeah, that's a nice age. So I don't know that because I don't have children, but I have had the opportunity while I was studying, we would regularly host something called Children's Lab, meaning where we would invite a bunch of preschoolers to spend a day with us and to just do tons of experiments. So they would all get like a little lab coat and they would all get their goggles on and so on. And we would do experiments with things that you find around the household. And obviously we wanted them to learn something, but the main focus was for them just to have a really, really great day, to be to have fun experimenting, discovering, go crazy, make completely nonsensical experiments, make a mess, but just really have fun so that they don't, that they get closer to this. And there are probably tons of resources all around the internet on this, but a few things that we did were, for example, it's like this magic ink kind of thing. So where you would write with lemon juice, you would just write something on a piece of paper and you would not see, you would see where it was wet, but otherwise you wouldn't see it. And then you can put it in the oven for a little while at some low heat. And then then it becomes brown and then the ink, so to speak, becomes visible. And so that was one small thing. Then there's another thing that we did. So you know how you can have this little filtration paper, like when you make coffee and so on. So you can you can have these in white. And we would basically use pens, so colored markers, and just make like little dots. And then we would have a solvent, which was either water with a bit of how do you call acid in English? So something acidic anyways, or it would be vodka depending on the marker. And then it would kind of like, so the solvent creeps along the paper, and when it reaches the dot of the pen is, then it takes some of the colors with it, and black gets dissected into all its consisting colors. And, you know, we would call it like a little, the Formula One of pens, basically, just to see which one gets the fastest or the farthest. Or then another thing is, what is always fun is making a volcano out of baking soda and lemon juice. So there's a lot going on there to watch. And then another thing that I find still to this day, I really find it so impressive, is we would make a rainbow in red cabbage juice. So we would take some leaves of red cabbage and cook them. So we would have the juice, and when it's cold, we would fill them all in like little test tubes. And then we would put drops of other things in there. And so it's really a really dark purple, dark blue when we start out. And then if you put in something acidic, like you can use apple juice or vinegar. Now, there's the word Essig in English is vinegar. Then it becomes red. If you put in something basic, like, washing powder, for example, it turns green. And then if you, we would make a solution of washing powder. And then if you have washing powder that is just for whites, you know, that has these bleaching agents in, then it would actually over time turn yellow. And so you would have a really nice rainbow out of this red. Don't drink it. Please don't drink it anymore. But yeah, so this, you can see from what I'm talking about, is like, it was just so much fun. And they were just always so excited about what we did there.
That's great. Well, I'm really glad I asked you this question, because you're definitely really passionate about it, and these can be helpful exercises. Now, I wanted to ask you, how can our audience keep in touch with you?
Yeah, so come and find me on LinkedIn and say hello. I always love connecting with people there. And other than that, you would probably put the link to my website in the show notes. And then I invite everyone who likes to learn and grow and develop to come and join me for the next Women in STEM Reimagined Masterclass. It's coming out every March and September. So it's a week-long masterclass series with interviews of different experts to help you with your professional development. And it's free to attend.
That's great.
If you enjoyed this interview with Nicole Cierske, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and share it with a friend.